All right. So, first of all, I just... Sorry, hold on one second. Sorry. No, it is actually. All right. Thank you very, very much, all of you, for coming out on such short notice. Really, really appreciate it. Even more Hakar Satov to Ms. Shandel Symes, who actually agreed to come here on short notice. She's actually here on vacation, believe it or not.
I know, so. Someone has to teach me how to vacation.
Yes, no question about that. we're really very, very lucky that she has agreed to come and speak to us, so we're very, very thankful for that. Shandel and I know each other for many, many years. We go back way back to our yeshiva days.
Before that even, I knew you from camp.
Oh, that's true. Okay, she's right. Way before that, before yeshiva. Yes, exactly. Before Burn Street, Burn Street wall neighbors. That's you. I wasn't Tucson, but yes, we used to be able to knock on our walls and share walls with each other. And you're going to find this to be one of the most inspiring speeches, really, that at least I know for myself. I've heard this before, and just the inspiration is just tremendous. And I know for myself, one of the pieces that are so inspiring to me is that, again, we know each other so many years back, and obviously, she's not normal like one of us, but she is normal like one of us. You're gonna hear from her, and the Madrega of Emuna and Bitachon and is just unbelievable. But really, I know Shandel from years back when she's in yeshiva, just like one of us, and having that same idealistic dream that we all have, and going through a lot of the same trials and tribulations that we all went through at that time. But amazingly, she was able to find that strength within herself and to really apply it in a tremendous, tremendous way. So always inspired every time I speak to you, but certainly when I hear this speech. And thank you again. Oh, wait, I'm supposed to say something. Sorry. I don't do this very often. Also, if you want to hear other shiurim by Revitin Shandel Symes, you could visit TorahInteractive.com and click on Bino Seha for any of her other recordings, and I could send out that link after. Yes, we could send out that link after. Okay.
Thank you
so much.
So thank you so much for coming out here tonight, and I want you to know that it really is a chizuk for me to be coming here to speak to you and to share my story with you, because I can also use an injection, a shot in the arm, just to remind me of what I say and just, keep me going and just to really reapply the things that I tell myself. And when I'm telling it to you, it's not just lip service. It's really, these are things that really resonate with me, and these are the things that I really use to get through my day. So what I want to share with you, I guess, is a little bit of a background, tell you a little bit about my story, tell you about some of the things that I learned along the way, and just some of the techniques that I find help me get through any day, which can help anybody in anything that they're going through. It doesn't have to be anything so drastic, and we would never wish that on anybody, but even just in the daily grind, and just when things become redundant and things are collapsing and everyone is caving in on you all at once, and you're being pulled in so many different directions, just how do we just get through the day? So tonight's shiur is dedicated to Le'iloi Nishmas, my husband, Harav Yehuda Pinchas Ben Yitzchak Isaac. His third yahrzeit will be in exactly a month from now, Yud Al Shvat. And any inspiration should be as an aliyah for his neshama. And certainly everything that I am today is because of what we went through together. And I couldn't have gotten to here today without him then. So my story is as follows. As Hannah said, I started out as a Chafetz Chaim girl. My father's a Musmach at Yeshiva Chafetz Chaim, and my husband was a Musmach at Chafetz Chaim. But before he was, we did the whole kollel thing where, he was learning in yeshiva, and I was teaching and doing other things to support the family, and he did his, you know, odd jobs over Shabbos, you know, nursing home job there, nursing home job there, going, you know, doing bar mitzvah lessons, you know, a youth minion, all kinds of things just to get us through Kollel. And really, Kollel was our priority at the time. We were going to get through Kollel, and then we were figuring, okay, once Yehuda gets Micha, we were going to go and we were going to leave New York, and we were going to go to a smaller community where we felt that we could make a difference in the community, someplace where maybe other people wouldn't go because it's, you know, kind of off the beaten track. No, not necessarily a pizza shop, which I think you guys have one, right? So you are so not out of town. So where there is no pizza shops or other amenities, or just at least not in short supply. So that's where we had a little bit of a difference in agreement about what does out of town mean. So I grew up in Queens. So to people in Brooklyn, Queens is out of town. Like, they don't go past, you know, the Bell Parkway. And so I figured, you know, out of town, Chicago. Chicago is really nice. I like Chicago. My aunt and uncle live in Chicago. We have relatives in Chicago. I like Chicago. And my husband's like, Shango, Chicago is so not out of town. I'm like, are you kidding me? You have to get on a plane to get there. I'm like, sure. And he's like, yeah, but Shango, they have pizza shops. I'm like, not a bad thing, you know. He's like, no, I was thinking of something else. So his something else had to do with where he was born. He grew up in St. Paul, Minnesota. Now that is out of town, especially in 1967 when he was born. There was no pizza shop. There was no kosher anything. Kosher anything meant your mother's house, your bobby's house, and your aunt's house. That's it. Maybe one or two friends that you were allowed to eat by, but not really more than that. So he grew up in St. Paul, Minnesota, which was a midbar. Like, there was nothing there. Nothing there. It's known as the Twin Cities because it's a sister city with Minneapolis. So right now, if you think of Minneapolis now, it's a blossoming, blooming community. There's a girls' high school. There's stores. There's a whole kahila there. Minneapolis is growing. But back then, there wasn't really anything either in Minneapolis. And there really wasn't much to speak of. So anything that's really infrastructure of Minneapolis now, and even to an extent St. Paul, is due really to my husband's family. So his family, the scientists, so my mother-in-law was in charge of the mikvah. My father-in-law would help out. They would bake matzahs in a matzah oven in, I don't know if it was their basement, their backyard, their shul. I forget what the family folklore is. And then the cousins, the Silverbergs, the Kutoffs, those were all people who were instrumental in bringing anything to the community. Anything that's there now is because of those people. So he knew what out of town meant. And he knew what it was like to grow up like with no friends and to play with, you know, the little Greek boy who lived next door. That was his friend, except for like maybe there was one or two boys that traveled on the bus with him over to Minneapolis to where the Torah Academy was. And the school now is growing. I don't know, there's even a girls' high school there. That's also, like, the school now, there's so many things there, but that infrastructure wasn't there, and that's what he meant by out of town. So I was kind of hoping that during our years of Kollel, like, he'd become more New York-ish, and like St. Paul would be like really foreign to him. And I think he was hoping that, you know, Chicago would seem too big city for me because I was from the big city. So came time, he got Smicha, and we were discussing, you know, what our options are and what kind of job we wanted to look into. So I said, okay, let's talk about this. You want out of town, not as far as you. Okay, let's figure this out. So we kind of compromised. I said, okay, if we're going into Kli Kodesh, that means we're going to have no money. So if we have no money, that means we won't be able to afford plane tickets. So if we can't afford plane tickets, then I'll never be able to go home and see my family. I'm the oldest in my family. Like, I want to visit my family. So it has to be someplace that's in driving distance to New York. We have to be able to get in a car and go. Like, load up the van with the kids and go. Like, okay, you know, there's a lot of yehopetzes between, you know. And then I said, well, at the time, I had a son and four daughters. I said, I'm never going to send away our girls. Mm-mm, never. So, you know, we have a boy. Chances are he'll go to one of the Chafetz Chaim Yeshivas somewhere, you know. My husband went to WITS, so maybe he'll go to WITS. He could come to Florida. He can go to Vancouver. He could go anywhere. There's like so many yeshivas out there that he could go to. And it's normal for a boy to go away for high school. Although my husband, having gone away for high school, didn't think there was anything so normal about a boy going away for high school, but, you know, it's a little bit more run-of-the-mill. So we compromised. Okay, someplace with the girls' high school, someplace we can drive to. Okay. So we heard about the city of Ottawa, And I kind of knew of it because we knew the Shapses. They had been there for years and we knew them. And we knew David and Suzanne Berger were there a couple of years before us. I'm like, okay, there's Chafetz Chaim people there. We have people that we could relate to there. And they said, why don't you come up and check it out? So we went up and we checked it out, and the city was, it's a beautiful city. Very, very cold. So you people, I think there was like a letter going on a couple years ago. Probably you have it again. We got it up in Ottawa, and you guys, sorry, you were a laughing stock, because you got a letter that said, please send a sweatshirt to your child to school tomorrow because it's going to be 50 degrees. And if the teachers think it's okay, they might even let your kids play outside. And we were just hysterical because in Ottawa, we play outside every day until minus 24 Celsius. So that's kind of chilly, but otherwise, I mean, otherwise we'd never go outside. You can't be indoors for 6 months. On the, like, we get like this one stretch, like a really cold spell when it's minus 40. By the way, at minus 40 Celsius and Fahrenheit, it meets. So at minus 40, we have that for like a week. Then you don't go outside. And then if you're a teacher and you have kids indoors all day, you're pulling out your hair by the second day of the minus 40. And as a parent, you're for sure pulling out your hair. So we're like, okay, yeah, bring a sweatshirt, honeys, you know? You might melt. So fine, so we go, we check it out, it's beautiful. We decide, we accept the position. The Shakin family was also there, they were moving that summer. It was great, and we were really, really excited to be starting this new adventure and this new, you know, new beginning in our life. We were moving to Ottawa, this is what we had. You know, this is what the epitome that we had, you know, worked on. We had gone, you know, gone through Kolo, gone through, you know, the whole yeshiva program, and here we are. And my husband got a job in the community day school. I was teaching in the Torah school where the kids went to school. He was doing some Talmud Torah, and then the next year or the year after, he stopped the Talmud Torah, and then he started Torah High with a friend of his. Torah High is an affiliation of NCSY. So it's an after-school high school program where Jewish kids in public school can get high school credits. Thereby, they can theoretically graduate high school. If they do it for all 4 years, they can theoretically graduate high school a little bit earlier. And then, you know, hopefully we can, you know, encourage them to go to Eretz Yisrael. And meantime, they're taking Jewish classes and they're going to Shabbatons. And there's all kinds of programming for them. At its peak, after my husband started, at its peak, there was like 100 and something kids. And we were just really became very, very enmeshed in the community. My husband was teaching at this place. He was running that program. I was teaching in the day school. I was giving classes for women. And our family was growing, you know, and the family was part of it. Like, this is who our family was. Our family was Ottawa. Ottawa was our family. So think about it. Shabbos, we had students over all the time. We had parents of the kids over all the time. In fact, we moved to like a more, like if Ottawa was out of town, we moved to like an even more out of town neighborhood, because that's where the majority of the students that my husband taught lived. And we wanted to be able to invite them over Shabbos and not have to worry about issues with driving and everything. Like, this would be, you know, walking distance. It was the same side of town. So we had them over for Shabbos. We had them over for Yontif. Every night of Hanukkah was another Hanukkah party for a different class. Every night of Chol HaMoed Sukkos was another Sukkah party for the class. I had my Sukkos parties for my class during the day. He brought them over at night. And the kids all knew the drills. The kids, like, it was like on autopilot. The kids knew Hanukkah's coming. Okay, they knew which games to prepare. They knew, you know, we had to just remind them. They weren't allowed to tell, like, you know, there was the sticker underneath the plate, and whoever got the sticker under the plate, they're the one who brought the prize. Like, the kids all knew the drill, and the kids were really a part of it. Shabbos afternoon, we had people over in the afternoon. There was like, you know, these high school boys who had come. When we first moved, my father found these boys at Cholet. Like, could you come help my daughter unpack? So they came, and then I think we gave them like a pizza party. A barbecue. We made a barbecue for them. I forgot what it was, like something. And then those guys became like our B'nai Bayis. Those guys would come every Shabbos afternoon. I wake up from my Shabbos nap and these like teenage boys sprawled across my couch eating Twizzlers. You know, we would just lead out mass for them, and they would come. Shabbos afternoon, my husband noticed after like a bunch of Shabbosim, the rabbi would speak in between Mincha and Maariv at Shalashuvah time, and the boys would walk out because they were teenagers. Like, it wasn't really geared for them, and he didn't want them to just be floundering. So he asked me, is it okay if I bring the boys home for Shalashuvah? And I said, of course. So every Shabbos we had our baby carrots, hard-boiled eggs, peanut butter, depending on if the boy who was allergic to peanut butter showed up or not, and challah, like nothing, chips and salsa, like nothing fancy. But the boys came, they trooped in week after week after week. They would come and they looked forward to it. And, you know, we had our Kohen, so he knew he was in charge of leading benching. We had the one who liked to learn, so he would give it Dvar Torah. Like, everyone had their job, everyone, and it was just always happening. And that's what it was like, always, when is the next event, and what are we doing, and what are we doing next? And Baruch Hashem, life was amazing. Life was, you know, we had our usual, you know, things that happened, but we were happy being there, and we were happy with what we were doing, and we felt like we were really, really achieving, and we were really growing and doing what we were supposed to be doing. Like, we felt like we came to the community to make a difference, and we felt that we could see that there was a difference, and we felt like, you know, we knew people, and people had a connection to us, and we had a connection to them. I'm saying now, like, if I look through, like, my roster of friends from Ottawa, I have friends from all walks of life, all ages. Like, today I was here, I went to go visit my friend. She's old enough to be my mother. But, like, these, I became friends with, like, people, through, and we're close. Like, this was it. Like, it was a community. It really, really brought us together. And then came, like, a minor, I guess, relatively minor glitch. So my son was in eighth grade. He graduated eighth grade. There's a yeshiva high school there. There was. And figured, okay, great, yeshiva high school. He stays. Perfect. He was in ninth grade. So far, so good. Everything is okay. My daughter's in seventh grade. And the girls' high school closes down. And I was like, cute, Hashem. Cute, you got me here. Okay, I said high school, there was. That's why I came. It was good she was here for second grade, third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, sixth grade, seventh grade, it closed down. And at that point, we were just so a part of the community. We couldn't move, we weren't gonna leave. You know, this is my husband's Parnassa. This was who we are. Sorry. This was who we are, we're not gonna leave. And then I had to face the reality. Like I said, I'm never sending away my daughter. And it came time I had to really decide. Like, we had to really think about this now. What are we gonna do? We have to send away our daughter. And, you know, many a sleepless nights or nights crying into my pillow about sending away my baby. She's, you know, 13, 14 years old. Like, what am I gonna do? And we ended up sending her to Montreal. Montreal is 2 hours away from Ottawa, so she boarded by an amazing family that we're still close to. She boarded by an amazing family in Montreal, and she would come home for Shabbos. So that took us through ninth grade. My next daughter was in eighth grade. And in Montreal, they graduate after 11th grade. There's no 12th grade. High school starts in like seventh or eighth grade and goes to 11th grade. And we were trying to decide if, you know, Montreal was the right decision to send her to. It was close. But then she would like graduate at something like 16 because she was a November baby. So we were just kind of thinking, you know, the ups and the downs, like the pros and the cons. And at that point, my sister had moved to Rochester. And my brother-in-law became the principal of the girls' high school in Rochester. So I figured, okay, so if she can't be home, she'll be with family. So we made a decision to send her to Rochester, let my daughter just finish up in Montreal. She only had 2 years left. She'll go to Rochester, and again, you know, more crying nights in the pillow, sending away two daughters. Remember, I went from saying I was never sending my girls away, now I'm like already sending away my next daughter. So at this point in time, it was 2010, and I was expecting our ninth child. And we went to, more girls, by the way. So I have a boy, five girls, boy, girl, boy. I'm like seeing like all the girls in the line and thinking like, oh my gosh, like all those girls that I promised I'm never sending away. Sent away five girls. So we went, it was June, and we decided we were gonna go to Rochester for Shabbos, and we were going to go to the Ora graduation on the Sunday so my daughter could be in the community a little bit more, get to know people, see the graduation, and just get a little bit of a more of a feel because she was supposed to be starting school, high school, ninth grade, in September. And it was on the way home from that trip that everything happened. So we were driving home, we were driving along the interstate, the I-81, that goes up New York State, it goes to the Canadian border. We were about 20 minutes away from the border. The border is about an hour and a half from Ottawa, so we're about 2 hours away from home, give or take. And my kids were on the phone with my son, and they're all talking because he had stayed home. So we had, my oldest son was in Ottawa. The rest of us and my expecting self were all in the car. And they're telling him we're almost home, we'll be home in about 2 hours. And then I was driving, and we had pulled over at some point for my husband to daven mincha. And what we didn't know at that point when we pulled over for him to daven mincha was that was going to be the last time that he stood on his own 2 feet ever again. And he came back in the car, he's like, you know, I have a headache, can you drive? I was like, sure. So while I'm driving, it had, you know, it was getting dark at that point, and there was a deer in the side of the, in the road. And I was trying to see, like, there's shadows, I couldn't tell if there's a deer in the road, and I'm like, he's saying, I think I see a deer, does anyone see the deer? And you have, like, no time to, like, make a decision, okay, what do I do now? And all I could think of was all the horror stories that I've heard about what happens when a deer comes through the windshield. I had a car full, a minivan full with my family. I'm like, I cannot let the deer come through and injure my family. So I turned the wheel to avoid hitting the deer. Don't do that. So I turned the wheel, I turned this way, I turned that way. In essence, I ended up losing control of the vehicle. And I felt like the vehicle was about to flip over. Like, I felt like we were going to turn. Next thing I knew it, like, you know, it was all like a mumble jumble. And next thing I knew it, the car was right side up. And I remember, like, feeling, like, disoriented, like, a little confused, trying to figure out what was going on. And then I realized that the car was upright. So I'm like, oh, that's so weird. I thought we were going to turn over. I guess we didn't. No, we had multiple times. It was just doing flips. And we ended up on the side of the road in a ditch, right side up. And my kids are all like unbuckling themselves and they're all like, get out of the car. And my husband's saying, turn off the ignition. We don't want the car to explode. So we turn off the ignition and we're all getting out of the car. And my husband says, I'm in pain. I can't move. And I said, okay. You know, I see that there's like lights on the highway, there's cars and ambulances and fire engines. I said, well, looks like help is here. They'll help you, don't worry. It's fine, don't worry. And we're getting out of the car and the kids are all standing there on the side of the road. Nobody was hurt. One daughter just got like a few staples on the side of her head, like a minor, she had like a laceration. I ended up having, you know, it's like some broken ribs and a pneumothorax, like a punctured lung. But I didn't know about that yet. And the emergency personnel come over to me and they start talking to me and they're asking me, you know, what's going on? I said, no, fine, we're good. And he looks at me, so I'm 6 months pregnant, like, and I carry big, I'm big. And he looks at me and says, ma'am, excuse me, are you expecting? And I'm like, what does he ask me such personal questions for? Like, who does he think he is? They ask me if I'm pregnant, it's none of your business. And then I'm thinking, well, anyways, I'm not. So I said, no. And he says, ma'am, are you sure? And I go, no, I'm not. And he was looking at me, and meantime, my kids are getting all frantic. They're like, ma, yes, you are. I'm like, I am? I'm like, yes, you are. Don't you remember? I'm like, what are they talking about? Like, I'm having a baby, I'm pregnant, what? And like, yeah, ma, remember Rosh Hashanah, the baby. And I'm like, oh. Oh, Rosh Hashanah. It's like I start like patting myself and I'm like, oh yeah, I'm having a baby. Mm-hmm. And they go, when? I go, huh, I don't know. No idea. I don't know. He's like, okay, you're coming with us. I'm like, no, not coming. He's like, you need to come with us. And I'm like, I am not leaving 7 kids on the side of the road at 10 o'clock at night in the dark. No, thank you. I'm okay. And he's like, and he got down like on his knees. And he's looking at me like you would look at a 2-year-old, like straight in the eye, says, ma'am, you are coming with us. We will take care of your children now. We need to take care of you now. You're coming. And at that point, I realized I didn't have much of a choice. I had to go with him. So they get me into an ambulance and they bring me back towards where we came from, like, I don't know, 10 minutes back towards where we came from to Watertown, New York, to some like community general hospital. And my kids, they brought over after in two ambulances. They divided up the kids. They would have like an older kid with a few younger kids, loaded them up into ambulances and sent them to meet me. But meantime, I didn't know what was going on there, and they didn't know what was going on with my husband. They just saw him, they were talking to him, and I was taken away. So we get to the hospital, they have me like in a triage, and I'm waiting, and I'm saying, so what's happening with my husband? Did they get my husband out of the car yet? Like, what's happening? Is he coming here? And I'm talking, and they're like, no, not yet. We don't have any information. I don't know. Not yet. And then after all, they tell me that my kids are there. Do I want to see my kids? And I say, yeah, of course I want to see my kids. They said, okay, should we bring them all in at once? Or do you want to see them one by one? So I figured, you know what, like, I don't know what's going on. I said, no, I should probably speak to them because I had kids from the ages of like 14 to 2. Like, I kept, you know, let me give the older kids at least, you know, some space and whatever. So they come in, I speak to all of them. And one of them in particular, she's like, mommy, is Abba going to die?